Today on Maine Calling, from prison inmate son to corrections commissioner, Randy Liberty's philosophy and where it comes from. As Kennebec County Sheriff, Maine State Prison Warden, and now Commissioner of the Department of Corrections, Randy Liberty has pushed the envelope, embracing new programs and ideas in correctional facilities. His mantra, or one of them, is low cost or no cost. In other words, he's creative when he wants to get things done. Liberty has a remarkable life story. His father, a repeat offender, spent many years in prison, and Liberty visited him there when he was a little boy. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Randy Liberty's story is the subject of a new book, Liberty's Prison, the inmate son who radically reformed an American prison. Liberty and co-author Christine Graff join us to discuss his background, philosophy, and changes he has instituted. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and dedicated to creating a community where residents are free to pursue their passions, and Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum school recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The first time Randy Liberty stepped inside the Maine State Prison was as a child, there to visit his father. Now he's the commissioner of the Department of Corrections, and his background informs the many changes he has put in place during his career. Today we're going to learn about that journey and Liberty's philosophy, which is chronicled in the new book, Liberty's Prison. Randy Liberty is here with us. As I mentioned, he is commissioner of Maine's Department of Corrections. He's former warden of the Maine State Prison. Before that, sheriff of Kennebec County. He is also an Iraq War veteran. Also with us, Christine Graff, who is a freelance writer who co-authored this book, Liberty's Prison, The Inmate Son Who Radically Reformed an American Prison. We invite you to join the conversation. You can share your comments and questions by email, a brief email, please, talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Commissioner and Christine, congratulations on the book. Commissioner Liberty, you've spent your career looking for ways to improve and reform corrections facilities, and I want to talk about those changes. And I also want to talk about your life story and your philosophy. You were a kid who really had it pretty rough, and where you are today, as I mentioned, informed by all of that. But before that conversation, I want to place this against a broader backdrop. You are the commissioner of corrections. The word corrections implies that prisons are places for reform. But that has not been the case through most of recent history, has it? People have not thought about people that go into prison as people who need to be getting some help and aid until very recently.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Jennifer, for having us. You know, in my 44 years of corrections and law enforcement, I've observed that, it's an adversarial sort of environment. It's an environment where punishment may be the focus. And it's the mistake I think we've made, not only in the state of Maine, but also nationally. And when you do that, you have individuals continue to return to the prison system when treatment, program, and education isn't the foundation for the work you're doing.
Yeah, so that you use the word the punishment, that people have thought, Americans have thought about prison as punishment and punishment only for a long time now.
That's right. We have a long history here in the state of Maine, the Maine State Prison and other correctional facilities, both state and county. And, I began my civilian correctional work in the early 80s in the jail system. And really what it turns into is individuals that have mental health, substance use disorder, learning disabilities, poverty, neglect, being incarcerated with very little programming and treatment. that really resolves the issue. And so when I arrived at the sheriff's office, both in Kennebec and Somerset counties, and then when I arrived at the Maine State Prison as a warden, that's what I observed. You know, a lot of people that were locked in for 23 hours a day, individuals that didn't, you know, receive the treatment and program that they needed to recover and to return back into the community, healed and redeemed. And so that's the work we've been doing here at the Maine Department of Corrections.
Christine, one of the many things that I learned in the book was a little bit about the history of the Maine State Prison. And boy, it has had some particularly horrific chapters.
Certainly. And I would definitely say the history of solitary confinement at the Maine State Prison with the Supermax. And as you may have read in the book, a former resident of the prison who is now a professor at University of Michigan, Dearborn. He actually took his first college course at the Maine State Prison. He is kind of an expert in prisons and corrections. He says it's one of, and he spent time in the Supermax. He said it was one of the worst Supermaxes in the country. So that's part of the history of the Maine State Prison.
And when you say one of the worst Supermaxes in the country, we're talking not just about solitary confinement, Christine, but also practices that I think many people would consider torture.
I would agree, and I will tell you that that was a very difficult chapter to write, because in the early history of the Maine State Prison, it actually was torture. They described something called stretching, where they would almost stretch the person and wring them like a rag. And it's and they were well aware that solitary confinement turned people into literally monsters. It had a psychological impact, and that's been known for hundreds of years, but the practice still continues. And so I found that chapter very interesting because solitary confinement was actually pioneered by the Quakers. It was deemed a well-intentioned disaster. They thought isolating somebody with a Bible would redeem them, but they quickly learned that it actually drove people insane.
And this was, the Supermax was functional well into the 90s in Maine, or built, am I right, in 1992? And we're not talking about distant, my point is we're not talking about the distant past.
No, not at all. It was built while Thomaston was still open. So it replaced the solitary confinement that was at Thomaston, which at one time was a hole in the ground with a grate on top. That was early in the history. But so people who were going to solitary confinement would be sent from Thomaston to the Supermax. And it was always at full capacity. For a lot of times it was for fighting or drugs or something like that. But a lot of times it was just for a minor offense. It was just used if you say you talked disrespectfully to a corrections officer, off you went to the Supermax, sometimes for months.
All right. So, Commissioner Liberty, you enter the corrections world. When this was the reality, I know that you were not at the Maine State Prison then. You started as sheriff of Kennebec County, and that's when I first met you. And already then, you were looking at ways to reform the system. You had set up a veterans pod, you'd set up programs for people with a substance abuse issues. Where does your philosophy come from? Why were you so committed to changing the system from the very start?
You know, as I mentioned, I've been in the industry for 44 years, and as a result of the time that I spent on the road for decades, seeing individuals in very difficult environments, seeing children being raised in a situation that may be very predictive of them being involved in the criminal justice system, I thought it was, you know, based upon my education and training and seeing all that I saw on the street, I thought that it's certainly more important to identify what brought people to prison or to jail, and then to assist them in their journey in recovery or treatment or education. And I found that not only do you help the individual that's incarcerated, but you also help their parents, their children, and you help the community overall. And so, you know, that's how I saw that. I think I was also informed by my early beginnings, you know, as a young child, as is indicated in the book. You know, the book starts off by telling a story of my mother packing up, you know, my brothers and I, and we were, I think at the time, 7, 5, 3 and a year old, and bringing us to the Thomaston State Prison where my father was an inmate. And so, you know, I'm the son of an inmate, and I've also guarded my father at the Somerset County Jail. And so I've been on all sides of this. I've made many arrests myself. I think that as a result of that background and that struggle as the son of an inmate and the poverty that brought, I mean, I grew up on free hot lunch, food stamps, surplus food and heating assistance. And so I understand the difficulties of some individuals and what may have brought them to our custody. And I just think I have a moral duty to address those issues and make them more healthy than when they arrived.
Yeah, Commissioner, that photo and Christine, you the photo is the first thing we see when we after the table of contents in the book, and it is a picture of you and your brothers in the prison with the prisoner who has been dressed as Santa. Randy, I understand you have carried that picture with you.
I have, and it's currently in my office here at Central Office, the Department of Corrections. It was at the Maine State Prison when I was warden. You know, and the interesting piece is, I visited him in 71 during his bid there at the Maine State Prison for burglary. And then, you know, 40 plus years later, I walked through the door as the warden. And that's really the story, the journey, and the resiliency and the story of hope of how you can navigate that. And it reminds me that when visitors come visit the prisons in my under my supervision, that they're victims also, you know, to travel this journey and be involved in that. The children are suffering, the spouses are suffering, the parents are suffering. And so it's a holistic approach to try to address the needs of that resident to help strengthen that family and also to strengthen the communities.
Yeah. Christine, I'm going to turn to you because I found reading about Randy Liberty's childhood and his family heartbreaking. And Randy, you always have such a great attitude. It's hard, I think, for you to express how horrific and how difficult it was. So, Christine, I want you to step in. How did you get this out of Commissioner Liberty?
Well, not only did I get it out of him, but I also had the privilege of interviewing his mother, his brothers, his sister, actually his uncle, Gene Liberty, was alive at the time. And that's how I learned that horrific story of Randy's father and his siblings being sent out of the house to sleep in the chicken coop and their drunk father setting it on fire. And I mean, that was obviously horrible, one of the most horrific things I had heard. But his family, Randy as well as his family, were remarkably willing to share their story. And through it all, what I found probably the most fascinating is that despite all of what they went through, they really did love their father. And I really tried to, that was in the chapter that is called Ronnie, that is devoted to his father, to really try to let people understand that, yes, this was a deeply flawed individual, but he was a victim of such childhood trauma. I mean, he also was born with this heart condition. He wasn't expected to live to adulthood. He was shaped by his childhood of trauma. And people loved him, though. He was super charismatic. It was just that when he was drinking, he was transformed into this different person. And so, Randy, his brothers, his mother were just remarkable in sharing these very painful stories.
Commissioner Liberty, why is it important to you to share this? You have been an open book for a long time. You and I worked on a project where you were open about struggling with post-traumatic stress after the Iraq War. Why is it important to you to let people know what you've been through?
I think it's important for me to, you know, let people know that regardless of the circumstance you're born into, you don't have to stay there. You know, there are ways that you can navigate and, fight your way out of that. And, you know, I've learned that the harder that I work, the luckier I am. And that started very early on. And my mother was, you know, in a very difficult situation. She was pregnant at 15. 17, 19, and 21. And so there she was, you know, a 22-year-old woman with, you know, four children, and her husband was incarcerated. And it's really a story of resiliency and her sticking with us. And she, you know, although she dropped out in eighth grade and my father obtained his GED at Thomaston State Prison, she is well-read and dedicated and determined to ensure that we didn't turn out like our father. And so it's that story. It's important to let people know that, you know, there is hope. You can navigate that. And for me and my brothers, it was really a story of positive male role modeling, male teachers in elementary school, junior high and high school, male coaches in football and track that were able to show us the way. And then my brother joined the Army his senior year, and we all followed him into that in that direction. And that really made the difference for us.
I thought reading the book that maybe I ought to be having your mother on the show for an hour because she seems really remarkable.
She is. She is.
You know, I agree with that. I was very inspired because she, and I think that's important, the chapter about her, to understand how she ended up in the situation. It was not that she just was remarkable in terms of that she was determined that her children were not going to turn out like their father. And that was her life's mission. And she really did accomplish that. So
yeah,
I
she
was
succeeded.
Very
yeah. Randy, you're not you and your brothers have all led very productive and very meaningful lives.
Yeah, you know, I think that it all worked out. And my brother Ron retired from the Army and he worked for the federal government. And he's working at Togus now, helping veterans. It fills his heart. My younger brother Ryan, he's an executive at Irving Oil. My younger brother Rick is a nurse practitioner and very successful, all military veterans. My sister Steph is a licensed clinical social worker. And so it all worked out. And you know, in the end, if you work hard, I think, and you have the right, you know, role modeling, it can work. And we know that people with adverse childhood experiences, one of the things that can mitigate that is just having people in the community that care and love you and can really help you pivot away from where you started.
Yeah, some of the conversations we've had on Maine Calling, it can take one adult, one caring adult can make a difference. And it really just such an important message for anyone who has young people in their life and they're concerned about those young people. Okay, so we've gotten this far into the program and we haven't even talked about some of the prison reforms. We do need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the changes that you instituted at the Maine State Prison, Commissioner Liberty, and some of the things that you've done since. What are your questions for Commissioner Randy Liberty, for his co-author, Christine Graff, of the book Liberty's Prison? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We're talking about the new book, Liberty's Prison, The Inmate Son Who Radically Reformed an American Prison. It is about the Maine Commissioner of the Department of Corrections, Randy Liberty. He is our guest today, and also with us, co-author Christine Graff. Join our conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also join us by Facebook or Instagram. Randy Liberty, I am going to fast forward to when you become warden of the Maine State Prison, and you decide that you want to put a garden at the Maine State Prison. Why a vegetable garden, and what kind of resistance did you come across?
So when I was sheriff of Kennebec County, I did the same thing. I'm a master gardener and I'm a beekeeper. And I think it's important that we identify, you know, what the needs of the community is inside the facilities, but also on the outside. And so I had some experience doing that at the sheriff's office. And when I arrived at the Maine State Prison, there were a lot of lawns. And there was also, I think we're struggling to provide the best nutritious meals that we could. And so anything that I do and have done, I try to do low cost, no cost. I don't want to put the burden on taxpayers. And I think we can spend our tax dollars elsewhere efficiently. So I reached out to University of Maine Cooperative Extension, Mark McBride, Mark Hutchinson, who I had worked with in the past. And he came in, he certified to this point. I think we're at 140 master gardeners that are residents. And we got busy tilling up the soil, and we began composting and recycling all of our material, rotating that compost back in the soil, and we began our journey. But there was resistance. There was, there were regulations regarding what residents can carry for tools, what they have access to. And at first, there was resistance to them having shovels or spades or hoes. And so it turned into a bit of a struggle. The challenge really for me there was to change the culture, to change the culture of one that was adversarial between the residents and the staff, and to turn it into a non-adversarial approach where we're all working in the same direction. And so we did have some resistance, and it's taken a few years to work through that. But we're at a point now throughout the entire system where we have gardens everywhere, and they're very low cost, no cost. The first year I was able to go to Moose Crossing, it's a nursery in Waldoboro, and ask them if they've given me any post-retail seedlings. Seedlings are a little too long, and they did. They donated 3,000 pepper plants, 4,000 tomato plants for nothing. They just donated them. We planted them all over the facility, and as a result, my the teams there, the residents and staff, were able to have endless salad bars. And it really invigorated people, and it really is done in a therapeutic sort of a way, the way you'd sort of garden with your grandmother. And so it was really therapeutic, I think, for many of them, and it's worked out very well.
Mm. Christine, Randy gave us sort of the abbreviated story. What would you like to add to why, among all the reforms, the garden is so important?
Well, I think it was the first time at the new prison that the residents were given an opportunity to do something, work that was really meaningful. And I, in the book, I talk about Nelson Mandela and what his prison garden did for him to be able, there's a quote about to be able to nurture a seed and watch it grow. And suddenly the men who were in the program had a reason to get up in the morning. They were also very proud because people would say, oh, wow, those tomatoes on the salad bar, they were delicious. And Mark Hutchinson, who's now retired, he told me that every time he came in to oversee the gardens, walk with the men, they were just so grateful. And that's what I heard from all of the people who came into the prison to work either as volunteers or through, you know, some sort of staff position on the outside, that the men at the prison would say things like, we know you don't have to be here. Thank you. Thank you for coming. We appreciate it. And for Mark, it was very rewarding. And for the residents, they had something to be proud of. And one of the interesting things, too, is that one of the residents who oversees one of the garden, he told me, and this is in the book, I believe, the highlight of the gardening season is gathering the produce that is going to be donated. And I said, I thought you were going to say it was the produce you get to eat. He says, well, that's wonderful, but it plays second fiddle to giving it away. And that's the component of restorative justice. And it makes them feel good. They're doing something. They're giving back to the community.
Commissioner Liberty, that was the first big reform at the Maine State Prison, but others followed. And one thing that struck me is that though the garden was your idea, many of the others were somebody else's idea. Somebody came to you and said, let's try this. And they often were surprised when you said, okay, let's go. Can you tell us one of those stories?
Yeah, I think it's important to be a low barrier sort of institution where when outsiders have good ideas, to give them the opportunity to do that and look for a reason to say yes. And one of those situations was I was teaching or I was presenting to a class, a restorative justice class at UMA, and I was explaining to them that the transformation of the prison at the time. We were a couple of years in as warden, and when I was talking about the work that we were doing, one of the students raised his hand and called me out and said, that's not the prison that I endured. And he had done an 8-year bid there. And I said, if you'd like to come see what we're doing, please. And he said, I can do that. And I talked him into coming. And he was so impressed that he asked if he could come back with a couple of his colleagues and make a proposal. And the Liberation Institute, Pierce, Jess, and Kevin came, did a presentation. They said, we would like to conduct some training that would create nationally certified yoga instructors as residents, and so they can spread yoga throughout the system. And you know, and they when they explained the program to me, I said, "How much will it cost?" Because I had no money, and they said, "We'll do it for free." And I said, "Let's do it." And we began that journey. And there was some resistance at first because they brought things like sage and, you know, and some candles and some other things for the effect to make it an efficient program, an effective program. And so we were able to certify, I think we certified 19 individuals as nationally certified yoga instructors. And that really transformed, you know, the prison in many ways, you know, in addition to the work we're doing with education and substance use disorder. It's really a holistic approach, trying to address everything, whatever that shortfall may be. And yoga was really a successful program that allowed those residents to go into the units and have, you know, credibility, be a credible messenger when they're delivering that. And it really centered people and allowed people to dig into yoga. And it's been hugely successful.
And another example is the reentry program. That program, Commissioner, came again from somebody coming to you and saying, "I have an idea." And you said, sure. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, the reentry program, you know, we're doing a couple now, and one of them is up in the Dorothea Dix complex, and it's leading the way. And that allows individuals that may not have a safe place to go or a healthy pro-social environment to return to. And we worked out a situation where we have 18 beds in that compound, and individuals can release there, get their feet under them, go to treatment, go to programming, and save a little bit of money, and then release back into the community in a healthy way. And, you know, we have a lot of stakeholders here that do a lot of great work, you know, and it would be, I think, it would be a mistake not to bring people in, trust them, let them do the work that they can do, and get much better outcomes when people are released.
At Christine, it's impossible in a one-hour program to talk about all of the reforms and their impact. There are 17 chapters in this book. But to you, what is the most profound, the most important reform that Commissioner Liberty has instituted and the one that you hope that people know about when they read your book?
Well, I don't know that I could identify a particular reform, because I think the most important thing that he has done is recognize that incarcerated individuals are deserving of rehabilitation and redemption. And people might be listening and say, "What, people are practicing yoga, they're supposed to be in prison," but which you don't understand until you read the book and really start understanding this, is that these programs are designed specifically to benefit not just the resident, because, for example, yoga has been shown to improve outcomes with incarcerated individuals. And even the people who were against the yoga program began to begrudgingly admit that the men in the program started exhibiting such positive behavioral impacts that it maybe wasn't so bad after all. So it's not like they're giving opportunities. People are in prison. And I think I want to make sure that you really understand when you read this book, it's not a country club. It is a maximum security prison. But the men who are there are getting opportunities for rehabilitation and redemption. And we all benefit by that, which is something I didn't know before I started working on this book, because by being rehabilitated while in prison, there's a much greater likelihood that they will never go back, which means that society benefits, because if they do go back, somebody is going to be a victim of their crime. Is it going to be you? Is it going to be me? Is it going to be one of my children? So there's less victimization, and there's also a benefit to the taxpayer. Who's paying when they go back to prison? We all are. And so I think that it's really important to realize that each one of these programs is having an impact by helping to give these incarcerated individuals a path for success when they are released. And then they're not going to go back to prison, and we all benefit.
And there is a way to measure this, correct? I mean, we call it recidivism. What's the national average for recidivism, for the number of people who will go back to prison? And what is it here in Maine? Commissioner Liberty, go ahead.
Yeah, so nationally, there are states that have a 60% return to custody rate. And so that means somebody within, well, upon release, within three years, they're back in prison. And there are some systems where, you know, we're paying six figures to house individuals, and it's very, very expensive. And in the state of Maine, the return to custody rate hovers around 20 to 21%. And so significant reduction in individuals that are re-victimizing others, and a 40% reduction from the national average. That's for the overall population. For women in the state of Maine, it's 9%. And really, the largest victory and the most success that we've had is our relationship with the University of Maine at Augusta. We had a program that was started, a relationship that was started with UMA about 20 years ago. Doris Buffett donated $2 million to bring professors into the system. And when that money was exhausted, we used Second Chance Pell Grant money, and they self-fund some of it. And if an individual obtains at least an associate degree while they're in custody, they come back at a rate of 0.05%. So individuals that go to college and obtain a degree while they're in custody, they don't return. And that means they become good citizens, good parents, good children to their adult, you know, to their parents. And it just really works out well. And our relationship with UMA has been tremendous. I'm also a adjunct professor at the University of Maine at Augusta, and I teach restorative justice and mental health and corrections. And when I do that, I teach from a studio at the University of Maine at Augusta. And I may have 5 or 6 or 10 students in class. I have others that are zooming in, and I always have students that are zooming in from the prison system. And so it's a very normalized environment. They're with other students, and they're the best students that we have. And they know the seriousness of education, the importance of education, and inevitably, they're the top students, you know, upon the completion of the class. And I give the free Mainers an opportunity. In lieu of a term paper, they can go visit one of my facilities, and they get to meet the fellow students that are incarcerated. And it's transformative for them. It really is. And it's I've seen so many success stories of individuals that are incarcerated that graduate from college, and they're released, and they're hugely successful in the community.
We'll go to some calls now. We'll go to Roy, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Roy. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I'm just calling out of my respect for Randy and what he has done during his career. I first met him on your show, Maine Watch, quite a few years ago, actually, when I was the director of the Vet Center, which is a community-based counseling center for veterans with post-traumatic stress. It's a VA program. And as a result of that, knowing that he had a veterans pod at the Kennebec County correctional facility, we arranged to have one of my counselors go up and provide weekly counseling for the veterans at that facility. So I just, you know, I didn't know his background until this morning. But I just wanted to offer my continued support and respect for him.
Roy, thanks for calling. Commissioner.
I've enjoyed working with a lot of people. Roy was fantastic. You know, when I returned from Iraq, for those that aren't aware, I fought in Fallujah. I was a retired command sergeant major. And when I came back, that's when I truly realized the impact of war psychologically on individuals. And so Roy and myself and Justice Nancy Mills, and we all rallied around and created the Veterans Pod at the Kennebec County Sheriff's Office, where the veterans can have the benefit of having shared experiences and residing together. And then Justice Nancy Mills created the Veterans Court as part of the Corcoran Disorder Court. And when I got to the prison, I created a veterans pod there also. So we have continuity of care for those veterans that get state time. And it's truly amazing to see the 74 veterans working together, raising service dogs through the America Vet Dogs and Mission Working Dogs with Christy Gardner. And an American Legion post that's inside the Maine State Prisons called the Brian Bucher Memorial American Legion post. Really meaningful work to help those veterans that have struggled as they transition back from war.
Roy, thanks for calling. We'll go to Vince, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Vince. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. So I've been in and out of this system for a number of years. If I was to mention my last name, I'm sure the commissioner would be familiar with who I am. So what I want to ask is, what do you plan to do about the substance abuse programs that are in there? You know, what is the ratio of people successfully not coming back after completing one of those programs? Because they don't seem to work very well when somebody's forced in there. And, you know, I was wondering how much, well, what was the success rate about that? And what he plans on doing about straightening that out? What is his plan on helping some of you not returning, other than what I've been listening to so far? Because there's some guys that really don't get it a few times. And I go back to Thomaston, you know, I was moved to Warren when it opened and back a number of times. And I guess I'm seeing the same 20% of people because I see the same faces every time I come back. And every one of them go through these drug programs. And it's just the same treatment. They change the name every couple of years. The funding still keeps coming in, but it doesn't change. It's not really reaching. What is his approach on fixing that?
Vince, thanks for your call. Commissioner.
So the first executive order that Governor Mills issued upon being elected was to expand ManCare. And then, as we know, that allowed an additional 140,000 individuals to have access to treatment on the outside. That's the important piece, to provide treatment on the outside, diverting people from incarceration. Her second executive order was really focused to me, and that was to provide universal medication for substance use disorder. Everyone in the correctional system in the state of Maine, if they have an addiction and they have a prescription for that as they enter, that's honored, and they continue to get medical treatment in addition to therapy. If individuals have been self-medicating, they meet with a clinician, and it's a clinical decision whether or not they should be put on medication and get treatment. And we support that. They can remain on that treatment for the entire time that they're incarcerated. And then we do a warm handoff with groups recovered together. So as they transition back into the community, they are referred to a clinic on the outside, and it's a warm handoff. As a result of that work, we've had a 60% reduction in overdose deaths upon release. And so that's worked really well for us. And addiction is a very difficult time. Sometimes individuals, it takes, you know, 5 or 6, 7 treatments before they're able to conquer the addiction. But that's the work that we're doing that we find very important and has been successful.
Vince, thank you so much for calling. We are going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we are talking about the new book, Liberty's Prison. It tells the story of how Randy Liberty's early experiences led him to his philosophy and his career. He is now our Commissioner of Corrections. He is one of our guests today, Commissioner Randy Liberty, as well as freelance writer Christine Graff, who is the book's co-author. Share your comments and questions. You can send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Doug. I first learned of Randy Liberty because of the hospice program there. Would he talk about that? Commissioner.
Sure. So the hospice program at the Maine State Prison has been operating very successfully for quite some time. And it's a different sort of a hospice program because in the community, we may not know the hospice workers that come in and assist us with transition. They know their people. They've done a bunch of time with them. That's their community. The humanity is just absolutely amazing. And I've been involved in probably 10 in my 11 years here at the department. And I've never seen such gentleness, compassion, wonderful treatment, playing music, giving individuals the nurturing that they deserve as they get ready to pass, family members coming in. Not only does it assist those that are transitioning, but it also has transformed individuals that have been involved in the hospice program. And it's really amazing. Candace Powell was the individual that had done so much work foundationally to create that program, and her legacy continues to live at the prison as we assist people in a humane way as they transition.
An email here from Jeannie. Thank you for approaching the incarcerated with compassion. What kind of training do guards need to receive in order to make the programs you've introduced work? And thank you, Jeannie, for that question, because Commissioner Liberty, what I learned is that when you started at the Maine State Prison, guards really didn't receive training.
Yeah, it is, you know, they receive the basic corrections training program, and individuals that do that, it's a 6-week program now. We've significantly evolved that into the 21st century. We continue to evolve the classes. We do 3 or 4 every couple of months until we'll have a total evolution of that training. You know, an interesting piece of the work that we're doing is not only benefiting the residents, but also benefits the officers. And that's important as we approach this, you know, prison reform and an evolution of corrections and better outcomes for the taxpayers and the communities. It's important to understand that we need to work with the corrections officers to make an environment that's safe for them, and an environment where they feel as though they can give back and they can contribute to the community. And every time I interview an officer or a supervisor that wishes to be promoted, and I ask them, why would they want this position? They say they want to help people. And if I can create an environment that's safe and meaningful for them, everyone wins. And so what we've been able to do is, when I first got to the prison, I created a program called the Maine State Prison Leadership Academy, where we were able to take John Maxwell's 360 and you know, work through those textbooks and share like you would in a sort of a distance learning, read a chapter, you know, email each other, have a discussion, how it impacts you, how it informs your approach, how it can impact the culture at the Maine State Prison. And we did, I think we did 16 of those courses, allowing everybody to train and be and evolve. We've also done some work recently with a program called Struggle Well from the Boulder Foundation. And the Boulder Foundation, this Struggle Well recognizes the struggles and the difficulties of working in corrections, being a first responder, being a soldier, acknowledges that and gives the officers an opportunity to learn skills to overcome that. And so really important to take care of the officers, provide them training and opportunities for promotion, and have an environment that's safe for them. In 2017, we had 87 assaults on staff, 87 times staff were assaulted. 2 years ago, we had 7. So we went from 87 assaults on staff to 7. So critically important that we've improved the safetiness for the staff. And as a result, our vacancy rates are very good. Staffing is very good. I would say we lead the nation in staffing and vacancy rates in the correctional systems.
Christine, you spoke to many guards working on the book. What were you hearing?
So I was hearing that initially there was a lot of resistance. Whenever Randy came in, he really did shake things up. But that I talked to many people that they did realize, even if they were resistant to some of the things that he was doing, that their work environment was changing. I mean, they told me stories that they would always have to have extra uniforms because they were getting feces and urine thrown on them all the time. And that started to change. They had a better work environment. And for some of them, as much as they didn't want to admit it, it was making a difference. And one of the things too, also say about assaults and things like that, if you're accepted into one of these programs, say the yoga or whatever, you are held to a high standard of behavior. Same with the education program. If you have disciplinary infractions, you're out. So suddenly you have a lot of motivation to be a quote unquote law-abiding citizen within the walls of the prison. And so the corrections officers realized they had a much better work environment.
We'll go to Alan calling from Winterport. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, all these innovative programs sound great, and the lowering of the recidivism rate. I'm wondering how it has trickled down or transferred or been deliberately adopted by local correction facilities in the counties.
The county jails. Commissioner Liberty, I know that you did some of this work at the Kennebec County Jail, the Somerset County Jail. What about other county jails in Maine?
A lot of county jails are doing great work. They're really up against it regarding the budgets, and staffing can be very difficult. We know that the county jails are funded primarily through a property tax, and that's a very difficult tax to levy. The state does provide $20 million or so, $24 million to assist that, but it's a difficult population also because the population in the prison system, they are there for at least 9 months in a day. Many are there for you know, years. And so they stabilize, and they're an easier population to work with. Sometimes, you know, frequently the population in the jails are there for 3 or 4 or 5 days, maybe 2 weeks, and it's a difficult environment. But they do provide medication for substance use disorder. Somerset County is doing a great job with that. Two Bridges does a fantastic job. There's a lot of good work that's happening in the county jails in spite of the challenges of potentially overcrowding, or, you know, people coming in that are high or drunk, individuals that are destabilized because of mental health issues. It's a difficult job for the sheriffs and the jail administrators to manage, but they're doing the best they can with what they have.
Alan, thanks for your question. We'll go up to Harpswell and Megan. Hi, Megan. Go ahead.
Hello. Hold on. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound great. Go ahead.
Okay. So I think what he's doing is absolutely brilliant. I have a quick question before I get onto my main topic. Is he doing any flower gardens? Is it just vegetables?
Yes, you are doing flower gardens. Megan, we're tight on time, so if you could ask your other question,
okay.
That'd be great.
Okay. Yep. No. I was wondering, has he heard of RTT, rapid transformational therapy? It's a hypnotherapy, psychotherapy, and a neuro-linguistic programming that's helping all kinds of people. And it's not something that happens over months and months. It can sometimes be just a few sessions.
Well, thanks for the question. Commissioner Liberty, is hypnotherapy something that you've been working on or looking into?
I have heard of that. We've done some of that work with veterans, and that's very effective and has worked well. And your first question, yes, we have many flower gardens. We have 8 beehives, many pollinators, beautiful gardens. So yes to both of those.
All right. Thanks, Megan. We're going to go up to Augusta and John. Hi, John. Go ahead. And again, if you could be quick, that'd be great.
I've only heard a little bit about a program where he actually has some inmates who are gainfully employed and actually helping offset the cost of their incarceration.
That's right, John. I'm glad you asked that question. Commissioner Liberty, this is one of the newer programs, but boy, it's taken off, right?
Yes, it has, and it has gained some national attention. In fact, I'm speaking to Colorado in an hour about that. They want to adopt it. It's truly hybrid work. It's a remote work. It's individuals that have obtained a specialty. Give you an example. We've had 45 individuals do this. I had an individual that obtained a paralegal degree. He was able to work for a law firm on the outside from the prison, performing legal work. And then upon release, he was able to work for the law firm as a free manor. They have free market wages. And so he earned $60,000 a year doing that. And the beauty of that is he's able to pay restitution to any victims in the community. So think about that. If someone's making $50 a month, they only send the victims a $5 bill. He's able to send $1,000 a month to that victim and really make the victim whole in the community. He pays child support, he pays mortgage on his home, he pays court fees and fines, and he also pays room and board for the privilege of working while he's inside. We've had 45 individuals do that very successfully, able to provide for their families on the outside and relieve the tax burden for the taxpayers.
An email here from Lori, so proud that Maine and Randy Liberty are leading the way in prison reform. I'm curious, the reforms are often discussed in terms of male prisoners. Women prisoners are also benefiting from these reforms as well, correct?
They certainly are. And so we just recently have graduated a couple series of coding programs that Apple provided for the women at the Women's Center. I have several of them that are working remotely. We just graduated our second class of women's construction trade program. They are certified in construction work, and they are actually working on construction sites now. We're transporting them there, and they're earning a fair market wage. Again, sending that money back to their families, and it's been very successful. And I love working with the women and assisting them in their transition back into the community.
We just have a little bit of time left, Commissioner Liberty, but I want to ask you if you've had any sort of just overall pushback on your philosophy and say that you're not tough enough on crime. We need to be tough on these people.
I certainly do. I speak nationally, and when I speak to my fellow 55 commissioners, there's some pushback from some. It can be challenging. They think that corrections should be about punishment and high recidivism rates and us against them. And I say to them, that doesn't work and it has never worked. Please look at my 87 assaults on staff and 7 2 years ago. It's better for your staff. It's better for everyone. It's better for the community. It makes our communities whole. And I've had 14 different states come visit the Maine State Prison to see how we do it because they're very interested in transitioning. This works. This works for the community. It works for the families. It's the way of the future.
Thank you both for joining us today. Commissioner Randall Liberty leads Maine's Department of Corrections, and Christine Graff is co-author with Randy Liberty of the book Liberty's Prison. Our sound engineer, Jane Donahue. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the first gardening show of the season, Growing Plants from Seed. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.